Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Warren, Michigan, and earned a physician assistant degree from Wayne State University. She is the founder and CEO of the Dream Project, which cares for orphans and street children in third world countries, including India, Brazil, and Mozambique. She is an ordained minister, and she believes that her life's mission is to ease the suffering of impoverished children. Her name, Julie Malachowski, a.k.a. Mama Julie. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Julie Malachowski, the founder and CEO of the Dream Project, and one special, special young lady. Julie, welcome. It's a real honor to have you.
Thank you. It's a privilege to be here today.
Thanks. Can we start by talking about your mom and your dad and your childhood?
Sure. Well, I have three sisters. I'm the third eldest. My father was a school teacher in Taylor, Michigan. My mom stayed home to take care of the family. I think my mom would say that I was the strongest willed of the children. I have many fond childhood memories. I was involved in plays and student government and sports, summer camps, family vacations, and I love all of my sisters dearly, and we're still close today. My father taught me to work hard, to persevere, to not give up, and to pursue my dreams. At the dinner table, he would ask us children what we were, to which we were to respond, a superstar. We then had to tell him which each letter stood for, the S being self-starter, U being unique, and so on. He was a calculus and physics teacher, so at home we had signs around the house up like, girls plus math equal opportunity. I learned how to love from my mother, and I also watched her model her deep faith. I think it's interesting to see how things come full circle. My mom herself was brought up in foster care and adopted. She has faced much adversity in her life, but it hasn't hardened her. To this day, she demonstrates what sacrificial love is, and she does everything she possibly can to love and support me.
Julie, what is a physician assistant?
A physician assistant is a medical provider who does much of what a physician does, but always works under the supervision of a physician. I've worked in many different settings. My most recent setting in America was working at Troy Beaumont in the prompt care unit, and the triage nurse would triage patients to either the prompt care unit or to the main ER section. And the prompt care unit were run by physician assistants, and people came in with cuts that needed stitches, broken bones, pneumonia, all sorts of things. So physician assistants, we treat those illnesses pretty independently, and we always have a doctor available if there's something we need assistance on.
A number of years ago, you went on a trip to India, and to say it changed your life is an understatement. Tell us about how that came about.
Well, in my second year of college, I was trying to decide what to do with my life and what to major in, as many people do at that age. And I began thinking about children that I had seen on my television screen throughout my childhood growing up, children in poverty. And I was praying about what to do because my faith is the anchor of my life. And I started thinking about these children often, all the time. And I thought, well, maybe God wants me to do something to help these kids. So I decided to study something in medicine. And when I found out about the physician assistant profession, I pursued that. And when I graduated, 6 years after I had made this decision to move towards helping children in poverty, I decided to go to Calcutta, India on a six-week trip to see if this was really what I was supposed to do with my life. And when I got to Calcutta, my senses were overwhelmed. People were everywhere. I had never felt such heat or seen the poverty that I saw. But I had never met children so friendly, sweet, and respectful as I did during that summer in India so many years ago. They are forever ingrained in my heart. I spent time with children who I met on the street. I was there to do medical clinics, but it was the street children who grabbed my heart. Every day I'd walk down the stairs of the YWCA and myriads of children would grab my hands. And the children ranged from 6 to 16, and they all slept and lived on the sidewalks. They weren't with their parents. The children looked after each other. One of the children had such vitamin A deficiency that his eyes were going yellow. And one day I was talking with a 16-year-old boy, Subhas, and he told me that he kept all of his worldly possessions in a phone booth and behind the phone. And that's where he kept everything because he lived on the street. And he told me that the police had come the night before and beat all the kids because they were cleaning up the street. And after talking with Subhas, something in me broke. I realized how these children live, and I had never had to process that reality before. And so I started trying to think about what I could do to help these kids. And a local Indian pastor said to me, "Julie, why don't you stay and open a home for these kids?" And that was the only thing that brought me hope at that time with the pain that I was feeling for the situations these kids were in. So I came home. And at the age of 24, I didn't know anything about how to open a home for children on the street in India, but I began talking with people and praying, and we were able to open a home for these kids a year and a half later. And after my time in India, I knew that my life would be about easing the suffering of impoverished children, that I couldn't leave those children and forget about them. I had to do something for them.
You quote Amy Carmichael often, quote, "God breaks our hearts to compel us to act."
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what happened in India. I cried for about 2 weeks after I understood better the reality of these children. I believe that God broke my heart for these kids so that I wouldn't forget them and I would do something to help them. We are his hands and feet in the earth, and he moves his people to bring hope and help to others.
We're talking to Julie Melikuski, and when we come back, we'll ask her how she ever got to Mozambique. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Julie Melikuski, and she was named a 2009 Physician Assistant Humanitarian of the Year. Quite an honor. Julie, how was it you ever got to Mozambique?
After being in Calcutta, India, I came home and worked to pay off my student loans, working in an emergency department, and then I went to Brazil and worked getting some training on working with street children, and came back again and worked in the ER, began a child sponsorship program for these children in Brazil that I had met, and stayed in the States for about 4 years working part-time and helping with this child sponsorship program. But I really had the desire to work directly with the children again. And so the AIDS crisis in Africa and the orphan crisis really moved me to move to Mozambique, Africa. And I took the first step in January 2004. I went over, and I just went over for a short period of time, a few months. But when I got there, ever since I first went there, I've never left. And so when I first got to Mozambique, it was a little bit overwhelming. I was in this orphanage of 500 children working, and I remember looking around at all these children and thinking, where are the mothers and the fathers? There was about one caregiver per 80 children, and I was in charge of overseeing a medical clinic for an orphanage of 500 children in the community. This was a little bit overwhelming since I'd never been to Africa. And one night, I walked through the dorm of 80 boys, and I looked at all the children laying on their beds, and I thought, these kids all need to have someone kiss them goodnight and read them a bedtime story. Many of the children never spoke to an adult the entire day. And so I began working with the Mozambican adult who was caring for this one dorm of 80 kids, and the two of us together worked to love these kids. And it was here that God birthed the vision in my heart to place needy children in family settings. And so now, through the Dream Project, we're raising children in family settings, modeling family for them, investing in them, so they will be equipped to be future leaders of Mozambique, bringing life, hope, and love to their nation. We're doing more than giving out bread. Every father and mother knows that a child needs loving parents. Every parent understands that it's important to go to bed in a loving home. And there are tens of millions of children living on the streets, and it's our vision as the Dream Project to provide a loving home to each one.
Julie, anybody who's listening to this show right now is saying, wow. If I might, how old are you?
36.
36 years old. Unbelievable. Can you tell us, please, what it was like the first time you held a child that died in your hands?
I didn't have any children die in my arms, but I had many people that I helped care for that died. I had one baby whose mother had died of HIV in childbirth, and the baby was in the hospital with the grandmother who was caring for the baby 24 hours a day. She was just staying with the baby, and I, seeing that the baby wasn't getting much nutrition, I spoke with the doctor who was attending this baby, and I said, could I help you serve this baby and help him get what he needs nutritionally? And so he said, yes, we don't have enough people to take care of all the kids adequately. And so I began helping this baby, and it wasn't too long after that the baby did pass away. And I went to this child's funeral, and it was then that the grandmother told me about another grandchild that she had that was very sick, and it was a one-year-old baby at that time. Her name was Helena, and she was so malnourished that she was not able to keep food down, and she was very sick. And so I began bringing food to the family, and the baby wasn't getting any better, and it was soon, I did several tests, gave her antibiotics, and she didn't improve. And so I determined that the child, even though I was bringing food to the home, it was getting passed around to so many that the child still did not get enough food. And so we took the child to live with us, and she's now doing great. Helena's now 4 years old, and she just needed to eat, and now she's thriving. And so that's the joy, is being able to take these kids and bring hope to them. And the hard thing is the kids that you do lose, but the amazing joy and the amazing privilege is the ones that you're able to save.
You're not only housing these children, you're also feeding them.
Mm-hmm.
And you prepare so much food in a day, and it seems to me once the word gets out, they must just overwhelm the food centers. What do you do when you have more kids than food?
Well, when we first started, when we first opened our home for children, I had to decide which children would come and live with us. And so I drove to the gate of an orphanage of 200 children, and there were many children outside the gate begging. And so I called over a handful of children, and I said, come with me and show me where you live so I can see what your conditions are, because we're opening a new home for children. And so I took these kids, and I visited their homes and where they lived, and I remember like yesterday, mothers chasing me down the street asking me if I would take their kids into my home. I had two mothers who said to me, even though I knew these were their biological children, they said to me, these children are orphans. Would you take them and care for them? And so mothers were so desperate to give me their children because they needed help caring for their kids. And so It was a daunting task deciding which children would live for us. And what happened the next day when I pulled up to the gate of this orphanage to take more children into my car and to visit where they lived, nothing could have prepared me for what happened. 50 children surrounded my car. I had one child several feet away from the car hold up a piece of paper and say, I have orphan papers, take me. I had another child pressing into my car window saying, write my name down, I want to live with you. And I had never imagined that children that I had never even met before would want to come with and live with me, a stranger, in an orphanage. And so after we had chosen which children would live with us, I told the rest of the kids, so we can't take all of you, but we'll do something for you. And so at that time, we began bringing the children out once a week. And we started with 50 kids, and we had up to 150 kids come out. And we had three foreign staff and a handful of national staff. And these kids would always tell me about all their needs. I had some children telling me how they needed flip-flops so they could continue to study. Others would say how they didn't have any food in the home and could I help them. And another would say how their mom was sick. And so I told the children that we would do something for them, but I also told them, we can't meet everything, every need you have. Look to Jesus. He will help you with the things that we can't help you with. And it's just been amazing to see how God really has met the poor. I always used to wonder how God really meets those who are the poorest of the poor. And there was several occasions where we really saw God's provision. One day we had planned for 80 children, and we had cooked food for 80 kids, and we managed to stretch the food to feed 110 children, but we still had 20 kids who hadn't eaten. And our Mozambican house mom called me over, and she shouted, "Julie, we don't have any more food." And I said to her, I shouted back, I said, "Don't say that. The kids will hear you." And she looked at me. She said, it doesn't matter. We don't have any more food. And so I walked over to the kitchen, and we prayed over the pot of, it was just rice on the bottom of the pot. And I said, "Well, just scrape the rice off the bottom of the pan." And the car had come, the big truck that we put all the kids on to drive them back to where they had come from, this big flatbed truck had come to pick the kids up. And I didn't know how we were going to feed these kids. And so I was trying to think about how we could do this. And I walked back into the kitchen and I said, "How's it going?" And she said, "We fed every single child." And I just want to say that my God still does miracles. He is the father to the fatherless, and he feeds the hungry, like Psalm 68 says. God multiplied the food, like the Bible talks about God multiplying the five loaves and the two fishes.
Julie, if there's a listener tonight, this being Christmas week, mm-hmm. who's really down, depressed, and says, "Wow, this 36-year-old young lady has unbelievable inner peace and joy. How do I get that?"
Well, Christmas is about hope, and it's about hope because on Christmas, God made his dwelling among men. And anyone who accepts God's gift, Jesus, receives hope for the future. Hope is believing that there are good things ahead. When a person loses hope, he stops believing that there are good things for the future. And if it feels to you like there's no hope or you need peace in your life, ask Jesus to meet you. He will show up. If you ask him to forgive your failings and take control of your life, he will. We met a family of five who didn't have hope, and they do today. I met this family because a church member said to me, "There's a family that's really suffering. I want you to meet them." So I walked into this home, and outside of the home, when I walked in, I saw two children. And then outside of the home, there was a mother laying on a straw mat on the ground, and she was weak, stretched out. She introduced me to her two young boys. They looked seven, but they were age 10 due to chronic malnutrition. I then met her older two boys, a 15 and 16-year-old. They were all thin, and they began to tell me their story. They spoke Makua, which was translated into Portuguese, which I speak. None of the children could speak Portuguese, which is the national unifying language, but because none of them had studied, the mom hadn't studied, none of them spoke Portuguese. The father had died. The mother was sick with HIV. The family was moving from veranda to veranda. They didn't have a fixed place to live. The older boys' childhoods had ended early as they looked for crabs on the beach to eat, odd jobs to do. Many days the children didn't eat. I knew these children needed a hand to help them. I asked the mom if she wanted help taking care of her children. That's when she looked at her two twin boys and she said, "Go with this woman. This is your hope." We began supporting the family through enrolling all of the children in school, providing food and vocational training for the older boys who stayed with their mother to care for her. The young twins came to live with us, just a neighborhood away, as their mom was so weak, and they have been our joy and gifts to us. It's such a privilege to tuck in Shali and Izaki in bed, to feed them, to send them to school, to watch them play soccer and see them develop and have the childhoods every child should have. Izaki wants to be a school teacher. I tell him that would be wonderful. And although it's common in Mozambique, it's not just that a teacher kicks a child out of his class because he doesn't have flip-flops. a notebook, a pen, or the equivalent of 50 cents to pay for a Xerox copy of the test. When he is a teacher, I tell Izaki he must do everything he can so that no child is denied an education. He said he would. Izaki's twin brother, and Charlie is the opposite of Izaki. He's very full of life and hope, and Izaki's very studious. And one day I was encouraging the children to dream, and I said to Inchali, I said, you could be an airline pilot. Months later, when I asked Inchali what he wanted to be, he said a pilot. I had forgotten our conversation, and so I said, really? He said, well, you said I'd be a pilot. And I said, okay, well, if you're a pilot, will you bring food relief supplies to the hungry and medical supplies to the sick? He said he would. So Inchali, Izaki, and our other children are going to be the future leaders of Mozambique, bringing hope and life and love to their nation. This last month, I received the phone call while I was here in Michigan that the children's mother, Irene, had died. 2 years ago, she had accepted Jesus as her Savior. And so I knew that she was with Jesus. And so even though I called and spoke with all four of the boys and I wept with them because they had lost their mother and their father at such a young age, I was thankful for hope for this family. The boys, Musa, the 16-year-old, is studying carpentry. Janito is studying to be a community health worker. Izaki and Inshali live with us. And they have hope in their life. And I'm so thankful to be a part of that. And James 1:27 says that religion that God accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress. And it gives me hope when I see how God really does show up and meet those that apparently have no hope. And God can do that for any person. He is able to make streams in the desert.
We're talking to Julie Malachowski, a.k.a. Mama Julie. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Julie Malachowski, an ordained minister who believes her life's mission is to ease the suffering of impoverished children. Julie, a gentle, all-loving father would never let this happen to 10 million plus kids.
Well, I believe God provides a way out for the children. And I've seen God show up where on the outside you would think there's no hope. I've been in church services where I've danced with people who had joy in their hearts, who didn't know where their next meal was coming from. And so somehow God does meet the poor and those in very difficult circumstances. He does show up in this world that is broken and full of trouble. He is the hand of hope.
Have you seen the movie Slumdog Millionaire?
I absolutely did.
What'd you think?
I loved it. I loved it. I feel like so many of these children are like my own children in that I can't go to bed at night and not think about the children that don't have a safe bed to sleep in or a mom to kiss them goodnight. And so whenever the movies Blood Dog Millionaire and a Blood Diamond
Slumdog
Slumdog Millionaire came out in Blood Diamond, I was so happy that we're able to shine light on the situation of these kids and that more people could see their reality in hopes that more people would get involved and be a mother or a father to these children.
Julie Malachowski, what have these kids taught you?
I have learned so much from the children and from the poor. there is this one couple that had three children of their own, and their sister and brother-in-law died. And although they didn't have enough food to feed their own children every month, they took in three orphan children. And I watch neighbors help neighbors out of the little that they have, knowing that they're not going to have extra food or food for days to come if they share their food, yet they share it. And on the street in India, I watch these kids living on the sidewalk share whatever was given to them. And I've just learned so much about really what's important in life and how important it is that we love each other and take after each other. And that's so much more important than the material things that sometimes we think are most important, because those aren't the things that bring us true joy.
Julie, how can we learn more about your mission?
Well, we have a website, www.thedream-project.org. thedream-project.org. And I'm overwhelmed by the hundreds of volunteers and individuals who've come together and sowed to make dreams for the children a reality. We have opportunities to help in a variety of areas. We're in the middle of building projects in Mozambique, so we welcome the assistance of people with strong construction and program management skills. We have opportunities for individuals who may want to participate in short or long-term missions on the ground in Mozambique. Currently planning with a team from Wayne State, some medical professionals and others to be on site next year. We have a variety of needs with the growth of our organization here in Detroit, from helping us administer child sponsorship to local events to managing our volunteer base. And of course, we always welcome donations of whatever amount. We're working on raising about $200,000 for the projects in Mozambique. We're a well-run organization. Over 90% of the funds we receive go directly into our programs. We're also just beginning a challenge we're calling the 2010 Challenge. We're encouraging 2,000 individuals to commit to $10 a month as long as they are able to help us be the face of hope to the orphan. It's amazing that when we give what's in our hand, even $10, and we come together, what we can accomplish. $10 will provide lunch to a hungry child in Mozambique for almost a month. I'm also in the U.S. for the next few weeks and would love the opportunity to help kick off the new year and speak with any interested groups about what the face of hope looks like.
Julie Malachowski, thedream-project.org. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Anything is possible with Jack Crisula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Julie Malachowski, a most amazing 36-year-old lady. Julie, God put three words in your heart. What were they?
About 2 years ago, the words rest, trust, and believe. God spoke into my heart. To rest in God's presence, to trust that He is able, and to believe that He is faithful and good. And so whenever I feel overwhelmed by the need around me, I stop and I pray and I meditate on those words, and I just ask God to meet me with His presence. And I've just seen God's provision over the last several years, and a couple of examples of that are the Mozambican government offered us several acres of land for the project for free. We've had so many people get involved that we didn't anticipate connecting with us. We were selected by an award-winning group of entrepreneurs called Solar Cycle to host their pilot on site in Mozambique. Genesis, the church in Royal Oak, is their main partner for overseas outreach. Community Christian Church in Sterling Heights chose us to be the recipient of significant funds for the building project. This past spring, the American Academy of Physician Assistants recognized our work and presented me with a National Humanitarian of the Year Award. And it's just been overwhelming to see how the amount of people that have pitched in time and resources who never met these kids, who just gave what they had in their hand to give, to be able to or did what they were able to do. And God put these children in my heart, but he did not leave me to fend for these kids alone.
You want to build at least one more home in 2010 mm-hmm. for 30 to 40 kids. How much money do you need to build one more home?
Well, the home itself will cost about $40,000. We also need to bring electricity to the site and do some foundational things so we can build additional homes. We need to bring water to the site as well. So the home itself without water and electricity is about $40,000, and then there's additional costs.
If there's a listener tonight that says, wow, this inner peace, this joy, you totally trust God. Mm. I'd love to, Julie, but I can't totally trust God.
I want to say to you that he is faithful and he can be trusted. And I know that God is good. And because of that, I fall at his feet and worship him. And I would challenge you to ask God to show up, to ask him to show himself real, to pick up a Bible and start reading it. God longs to meet you.
Speaking of which, Julie, why did God choose you to do this?
Well, it wasn't because I was the most talented or articulate. It had more to do with the fact that I was willing to go, and I've persevered and been obedient to what God asked me to do. I think that's why God asked me, is because I think he may ask different people, but what he wants is for us to respond, and I responded, and I said, okay, God, I'll go, and I'll trust you. When I first went to Mozambique, I thought it was a little bit of a humorous that God had sent me to Mozambique, because I am afraid of insects and snakes, and I was never much of a camper, and I lived for 2 years without running water and electricity, and we have lethal black mamba snakes in Mozambique, and we killed one snake under my bed. The local people tell me everything's poisonous, so I don't really know if it was poisonous or not. And the very first month I was in Africa, I was up late one night because I had managed to finally connect to the internet, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw a tarantula running towards me. I quickly got up on the counter, and for 2 hours I watched this tarantula run around the floor, and I was relieved because he couldn't climb the walls to get to me. And after 2 hours, I finally had enough courage to pick up a vase, and I decided it's this vase for my life, so I threw it at the tarantula, and he wasn't moving, so I got down off the counter, ran into my room, and shut the door. The next day, I was driving around town, and no traffic laws are obeyed in the capital city of Maputo in Mozambique, and so I really thought any moment could be my last, and it was at that moment that I realized that I was going to have to make a decision. I was either going to go home because I couldn't stay in Mozambique in fear, or I was going to have to live what I always said I believed and trust my life was in God's hands. And I decided I would choose to trust that my life was in God's hands. And for anyone that's out there that's making that decision, if they're going to trust that God really is good, I just encourage you to say he can be tested. And this was the beginning of a deeper walk of faith for me, and sometimes you don't know what you really believe until you're tested. And it was a foundation upon which many tests were to come. Since that time, I've had colleagues sick with malaria. I've had malaria. One night in the middle of the night, there was this huge storm. We lived on the Indian Ocean, and we didn't have any outside communication to know what was going on. The sky was black, and we just waited and prayed, and the storm blew over, and I have seen, and there was one day I was walking on the beach, and we had been building for several months, and I was the only female. We didn't have any children, and I was feeling lonely, and I just said, you know, God, I will stay here and I will persevere, but you've got to show up and help us help these people. And I just want to say today, many years later, I have seen God answer that prayer. I've seen him provide for the poor and answer.
As we end, Julie, could you lead us in a prayer as we enter this most holy week?
I'd love to. Jesus, we thank you so much that you are good, God. And Lord, I remember the scripture, 2 Corinthians 5, that says, for Christ's love compels us. God, I just pray that your love would compel us. God, that everyone listening to the show would know that you are good and that you are loving, and that it would compel us, God, to seek you and to love others. I pray that you would just touch everyone with your presence and meet them in a special way this Christmas. In Jesus' name, amen.
Julie Malachowski, I've met a few living saints in my time. We've just met another one. God bless.
Thank you, Jack. It's been a privilege to be on your show.
We hope that everybody listening has a blessed Christmas and a healthy and rewarding 2010. Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, a special week, because with God, anything is possible.